boy was all for pushing and or kicking or doing something to take the weight off of those dogs. They always do it. That's just in the game, that's all. Save your dogs all the time. Never mind the man, but save the dogs. But I'll bet you out of that 100 miles, that boy was on his feet for 90 of them. It's just done, and I don't think it's any extreme manner. I think there's lots of men right here to do it. But it's just, he's done it and likes it, and that's all there is to it. Now, that's what we'd do on our mail run. We'd just protect our dogs all we could, whether my team or somebody else's. You just protected them and kept your sled in the best of trails, kept your dogs going as best you could. Now, we used to at night, when we had gone to stay all night, well, we'd run our sleds up on some brush. And we had a man that took care of the dogs. He'd cook the feed and feed them when we got in. And he would have brush out on the river or on the trail wherever we was. And we'd run our sleds up on that. We'd have two, Johnny, with, oh, there'd be some of them from 12 to 16 feet, 22 inches wide. That made a trail wide enough for our dogs to run on. And we'd run our sled up on that, those bushes. That was so it wouldn't freeze. Now, there was enough friction or heat. It didn't make any difference. It was 40 below zero. You come in with that load on that runners and let them sit on the ice and it'd freeze to the ice. The next morning you'd have a devil of a time starting. So we had to run them onto these brush. Well, next morning when we got ready to go, of course our load was all on the brush and a little hard to start. Well, we had a man there to help us start. And if it started a little hard, why, we'd just reach down and catch the tow line in our hands and pull it up just as high as we could between our legs, right to our crotch. Then we'd let out a hoop at our dogs, and they would lunge. Well, as they would lunge, they would jerk that line out of your hand, and it'd just snap, you know, and that jerk, as a rule, would get a man out of just fitting near any hole. On the mail. Now, I don't say mail. No, because there was freight, there was passengers, there was what have you. There was a limit of mail, and then if somebody had a load of freight to go, you took it, and anything that is to go, I went with you. That is the only transportation. Now, our dog feed come up the river, as a rule, during the summer on the boat, and that meant tallow, cracklings, anything that was grease. And we'd also have salmon occasionally we'd cook, but we'd have cornmeal, we'd have rolled oats, we'd have rice, anything we'd get hold of that. I mean, the cheapest, didn't make much difference which rice, made awful good feed, sort of cornmeal, rolled oats. And you would put about a pound of tallow or whatever you had, grease, or a half a pound of grease per dog, and then you would cook it. Give a dog all he could eat once a day. That is all he got. If we was feeding him salmon, dried salmon, we'd figure on about 2 pounds to the dog. Now, that is just the same as feeding him around 5 pounds of fresh salmon, because you take a 5-pound salmon and he'll dry down to about 2. So we switched food around quite a bit, and give him a change and kept him in just the best condition. Now, we figured that around 40 miles was just about all a dog could stand the year round, every day. So we tried to give him a rest. We might drive him 100 miles, but we'd try and drive him 25 or 30 the next day, or maybe not at all. Or maybe when we were back, we'd try and get him 60 miles. We'd just do things like that to keep our dogs from just overworking themselves. Of course, they was always ready to go. A dog would just kill himself. That's all they'd do it. And you just keep on getting him along. Well, he'd just work himself to death and love it. I don't know why, but they do. Thompson Pass and the Isabella Pass. Well, this mail started out of Valdez and hit a blizzard on the Thompson Pass and was snowed in and bucked snow. And after it got over, why, it bucked snow for a couple hundred miles, got the Isabella Pass, and that was snowed under, bucked snow there, and it come in 20 days late into Fairbanks. Now, of course, there was a clause in the mail contract there, an act of God excused you for being in, so couldn't hear anything went. Well, it got in 20 days late by horse into Fairbanks, and from there to Nome, it is another 8 days before we got it, late before we got it into there. So the first, the latest mail that I know of went into Nome 28 days late. And that is just one of our tough winters. We'd have good winters and we'd have bad winters. We'd have early fall and we'd have late falls. But of course our late fall was always tough on the mail. They, on the Valdez Trail, they would take it by man for a while. Then they got horses and tried it with that. And always get through, but a lot of times awful late. That was up until, really, until the airplane took over. And so were the dogs on the Yukon. They was pretty busy till the airplane took over. Now, the last mail down the Yukon generally went by boat. Then the next mail would come up by steamer to Nome that way. And then come up the river up the Yukon, or Yukon and Tanano to Fairbanks and Nome, or Dawson, by steamer when the ice went out. You see, the ice with the mail would go right down behind the ice as it went out and take the mail down. By that time, the steamer would be in a Nome, and the steamer would pick up the mail and bring it back up the Yukon then after the ice had went out, and the mail would run all summer by steamboat. Those steamboats was quite a thing, Dick. You know, that thing runs about 8 miles an hour all the way, and they burned wood. And passengers on the boat, everybody, they'd stop about, oh, Lord, every little whipstitch and load up wood on the boat. And then a man would stand there and just shove wood in that boiler just as hard as he could. He'd just have time to shut the door, that was about all, and then he'd open, throw in another stick. Of course, when they got to the Five Finger Rapids, they had a cable there that for open their quarter of a mile, they just towed the darn thing by winch up through that Five Finger Rapids. But the boats come down, I've often wondered how they ever missed it. Boy, that was tough. They'd be coming down there, you know, I think the water runs 20 miles an hour through that Five Fingers, and they'd be coming down there. They had to outrun the water to get steerage way, you know. And they'd come through that rapids, and when the nose of the boat, just about two-thirds of the way through, bluffs there 100 feet high on both sides, you know, and you could throw a rock across it, and there wasn't, didn't look like over 6 feet on either side for the boat to go through. But they'd run the nose of the boat right up. You'd think it's going to hit that cliff in spite of everything you could do. And they'd give it a swing, and she'd swing off, and she'd almost get through all right. But a lot of times, you just wonder how they're going to make it, I'm telling you. Oh, yes, I was going to tell you about driving 50 dogs. Well, I had these pups in Nome, and mail was over spring of the year, and, of course, we used to always take our dogs. Fellas made that a business, of boarding dogs in the winter, in the summertime. It set up a fish wheel on the Yukon, or catch fish anyway, and nap any place it could. And they'd feed the dogs, and they'd charge you from, $5 to $10, depend on the year and the time and everything, a month to feed your dogs. So I was figuring on getting these boarded, and there's 50 of them, and four sleds, of course, and I had to take some food along with me, mush, to feed the dogs. And by the way, Dick, that dog, that word mush comes from the French-Canadian marché, and we just shortened it up to mush to make our dogs go. But these had to go to Caltag, so I just hooked them up, and of course now I had 10 good leaders in that bunch, and four sleds, and oh, not much, enough, I'd say maybe 1,000 pounds on the sled is all. And there's just no other way. The easiest way to get them there was to drive them there. So I just drove them as, well, it's just the easiest way out of it, that is all. Oh, by the way, I was going to tell you about that it rubbed out on the last one, that fella freezing to death. Well, we was on the Mencomen Lake, and this fella was about 20 miles above us. He wasn't a trapper. He just thought he could trap. You know, so many men just got an idea. All they got to do is set out a trap, and the animals come to it. Well, I'm telling you, that's to get to be a trapper, that takes a man a lifetime. Then he only learns half of it. But so many men get it in their head and that. And so he just figured, well, gee, we could make money trapping. Why couldn't he? He had some traps, too, so he moved into this cabin. Well, a good trapper wouldn't have moved in that close to us, that is all. But we knew he wouldn't get over 5 miles away from the cabin, and old cabin. We didn't want it and didn't want to even use it because we like to trap high on the mountains. I always did because your traps will blow clean. You'd set them down the snow, and snow come unless you set them under spruce tree, of course. A lynx trap is all right, a marten or anything like that. But a fox trap or a wolf trap, I like to get high on the mountain. They like to get up there, too, in the winter because it's easy going. Where the wind blows off, where's bare ground for miles, you know. I like that. A little hard on your sled, a little hard on your dogs. But, and you, too, because you got to run. But nevertheless, I like it. Well, we was figuring on running over the mountains, and he was in quite heavy timber. So it is all right with us. But early in the winter, he come through, took a notion that he was through trapping. And he'd go out. Well, we had a trap line running over the mountains about 20 miles. Same way he was going. Then he hit a river, and he followed down the river about 10 miles to our cabin. Well, it had been, we didn't know this, of course. We could have saved a life. We'd had any idea of so bad as he was, but he just didn't seem to know much. There'd been a little snow on the river. Well, it snowed all over, as far as that's concerned. It had blowed off our ridge. You could still see the tracks and follow, and always could, because you'd go over there and when the snow was on, and it'd leave tracks. But on the river, it had blowed over, and it was plumb clean. You couldn't see any tracks at all. So we put him on this trail and went over the ridge, and he got to the river fine without any trouble. But when he got to the river, there was no tracks to follow. And you hit the river right square. It had turned until you went right square into the river. And when he got there, you could just tell by his tracks, he didn't know which way was up and which way was down. Well, we never thought of that at all. So, of course, now when a man gets lost, he gets excited. When he gets excited, he wants to run. When he runs, he gets to sweating. And when he gets to sweating, it was cold weather, he freezes to death. Well, that's just what this fella done. You could tell by his tracks. He had run away one way and maybe fall in the snow and get up and go some other direction, tearing along, you know, or some other direction. He just had tracks scattered all around there. And we can see where